Blog Talk Radio.
Prophecy Keepers Radio.
This is Yasagonige, Will Bluewater, a seventh great grandson of Sawanuka, keeper of the Holy Cherokee Ark, who during the American Revolution became first beloved man of the Cherokee, head man of the Upper, Middle, and Lower Cherokee. Please join us at 5 p.m. Pacific Time on Sunday evening and learn how you, regardless of ancestry, may gain the privilege of worshiping as you please, even using indigenous, plant-based, native sacraments. Aho. You are listening to a pre-recorded interview from the archives of Prophecy Keepers Radio. You have been led by the Spirit to Prophecy Keepers Radio, a cooperative service of the White Roots of Peace Council. Whether it be the modern Asaga of Peru, the current Kahunas of Hawaii, today's medicine people of the Americas, the Holy Ones of Africa, shamans of the East, North, West, and South, or the present-day Atawehis of the Cherokee, we bring you the traditional elders and teachers of our modern times and their confidants from the Americas, the steppes of Asia, the Holy Land, the islands of the sea, Africa, and Australasia. We have not been conquered, and we defy the established order. This is Will Bluewater, the host of Prophecy Keepers Radio, speaking on behalf of the White Roots of Peace Council.
It's 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow? It's 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow? It's 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow?
Thanks for listening to the Wisdom of the Elders on Prophecy Keepers Radio, revealing closely guarded ancient secrets here in the modern information age of Aquarius. OCO, Ginalii, this is Blue Otter coming to you from the Cumberland Plateau, the ancient home of the Aniuntikwalaski, the people of the lightning and thunder, or the military protectors of the Cherokee Nation.
Hello, everybody. This is Prophecy Keepers Radio and your old buddy Blue Otter. And this turn around the sun, we've got star of stage, screen, and television, Dr. Robert Ghost Wolf with us. We're going to be talking about the legends of Aztlan and about red-haired giants and all kinds of strange happenings. How are you, Robert? Thanks for coming on the show today.
Doing fine. How's it over there?
Oh, that's pretty good. We've had a little...
There's a swirling thunderstorm.
We've had a little rain here, and typically here in the Ozarks, it's accompanied with a little bit of lightning and thunder, and I don't have one of those UPS things, you know, the uninterrupted power systems, and gonna get one real soon.
Well, I remember years ago when I was talking to people about the changes that were going to come and to look for thunder, snow, people thought I was... a little bit out of it. Now it's a regular phrase on the weather report.
We get it here too. We got this last winter, we had lightning in the winter. I thundered. I couldn't believe it. Well, tell us about these red-headed mummies that you've been talking to.
Mummy madness. Well, to tell you the story, I'd have to go back 20 years, story that doesn't get out on the other radio. And I was doing a lot of things in the 80s with a friend of mine who went by the name of Speaking Wind. And he had brothers, Chiwe, Nache. And out here in New Mexico, they found down toward a place called Coyote, New Mexico, in an old chapel, they found a Spanish manuscript that was written by a interpretations from the perception of the Native American rather than from the Spanish. And there were indications in the manuscript that there was another manuscript that it was in existence in another location in Mexico, which had maps in it that correlated to the information that was in the manuscript that they found written in by hand. And early 1600s, that would give a location to 11 halls of record. So we started, in innocence and curiosity, with a circle of elders out here to explore that. And that began the great adventure that we never could have possibly dreamed. It wasn't always an adventure of excitement and wonderful things happening. I mean, we were dealing with the Catholic Mafia. We were dealing with the Mexican Mafia. We were dealing with agents in black SWAT uniforms and black four-by-fours, chases in the desert. Since in that time, there was originally 9 in the circle. And out of 9, there were 2 elders who passed away by natural causes this past year. Chiwei, Speaking Wind, Nache, all brothers are dead now. So everybody died as a result of firings that went on in this adventure. What we discovered over that period of time was pretty amazing. We not only found giants, I mean, giants always stir up a lot of, wow, are they real? Do they really exist? Most of the time you'll hear a lot of people talk about them. They'll get up and they'll do a show about them, and you get through with the show and you go, well, what about the giants? If you follow my train of thought. Because they never really talk about them, because most of them have never really seen them. What we've seen with a lot of people is people taking pictures that belong to other people, making claims to things, and the stories are always like, well, okay, how many were they? What were they like? What conditions did you find them in? And people don't have the answers. Because basically, they weren't there. What we found was that there was layers of civilizations. And there were many civilizations that were here from the Euro-Mediterranean area. Things that we would be knowledgeable of in academic universities. I mean, we have Phoenicians, we have Persians, we have Assyrians, we have Asians, being Chinese, Mongols, and Siberians. We have Romans, Proto-Egyptians, we have Greek, and we have Celts, a lot of Celts. And when I say Celt, it's a phrase that, because of my relationship with Lawrence Gardner, I'm going to explain. Celt is not necessarily a Highlander from Scotland. The Celtic people, if we go to Rome fighting during the time of Caesar, fighting Gaul, well, the Gauls were Celts. And the Celts were also in Spain, Celtiberians. We also had Celts in Carthage. Alexander the Great found his passageways to the Far East through the guidance of his personal Celtic guard, which was his personal bodyguard, in a treaty that he made with the Celts. Rather than go to war with them, he took them in and made a treaty with them, and they basically showed him the secret waterways that go all the way to India and go all the way up into Scandinavia, if you follow them. And then, you know, okay, so that was real interesting, because everything's always, You know, my own thing is that everything has always been from the European perception. You know, history happened according to what the Europeans say. The life of Jesus is all about what the Europeans say. What Egypt was like is based on what the Europeans say. What the Mayans are like is based upon what the Europeans say. And yet, you know, in all fairness, they're notorious for destroying everything that they ever laid their hands on.
Yeah.
And they're also notorious for twisting everything around, re-editing it, and writing their version of the story. And as time goes on and generations go on, what you're dealing with is it's the only story left. And, you know, five generations later, people just accept as, well, this must have been the way it was, when in fact it wasn't that way at all. You know, so my entry into all of this did not come from that school. My entry into all of this came from Mayan elders. It came from Northern Native American elders, people that took me into the fold, so to speak, and showed me things and explained things to me, because I was a very curious guy. I always had a lot of questions. And over the years, I developed a relationship where they know that I don't lift things from sites, I don't sneak away with gold or objects, because I understand that part of the paradigm. I understand the spiritual aspect of things. You don't just go and loot things. Nobody may see you. You know, it's like the kid that steals the cookies from the jar. But, you know, eventually mom always knows that the jar is awfully low.
Mm-hmm.
And which you can't cheat spirit.
Yeah.
So I've seen a lot of things in my life with people who have tried to cheat spirit, and it never works. But my perception basically comes from an indigenous Western Hemisphere, I would call it Amerindians, because how do we categorize people all the way from Alaska all the way down to Bolivia, that when you follow the historical archaeological facts that tell you where they came from and what they were about, that they came from a vast number of civilizations that were here, that came from the other side of the world through a northern route. They came down basically through a northwest passage over Canada, and then came down through Canada. Everyone always talks about, well, they always came over from Siberia. They went across that way. But, you know, there's a funny part of that story, isn't it? Because they always talk about how they came over from Asia to here. Well, if they came over from Asia to here, why wouldn't they go from here over there?
Yeah.
Recently they've made discoveries in the southernmost portions of Argentina that show that the skeletons, the remains, were not Mongolian, okay? In other words, they were not from Asia. They were, in fact, aborigines that came from somewhere to the west, most likely Australia.
Mm-hmm.
And
so science is starting to put the pieces together.
Well, yeah, we just keep hitting it, you know. We just keep telling them they're wrong, and every time they say that's impossible, we come up with another piece of evidence.
Uh-huh.
And today we have the advantage of having forensic science, which tells us without any bipartisanship, you know, without any prejudice, it says this is this old, this came from here, and this is made from these elements, and these elements are either native, indigenous, or not. You know, this stone came from somewhere in the Asiatic Sea. This stone came from somewhere in Southern Africa. And so the science doesn't try to appease anybody's dogma. It just tells you where it's at. We have found evidence in fire pits of steel, you know, which wasn't supposed to come around till when? 19th century.
Mm-hmm.
But we had steel 20,000 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And they went back and they matched it against the metallurgy that was done in Rome. It didn't work. They went back and matched it toward what would be in Sumeria, because the Egyptians had copper and bronze. But the Assyrians, which would be the later part of the Sumerian peoples, they had steel, they had black problem to the Crusaders and the people from up north, because they would come down and they would swing their swords, and these people from the Mediterranean would take their little, small, little black swords that were very light, and they would basically cut their swords in half. So we tracked it all the way back that far, and the only thing that we could come up with is that it was close to something in Samaria. The traces of the civilization were beyond 3700 BCE. So that would make it over 6,000 years old.
So,
in America.
So what you're saying then is that this hemisphere was a melting pot long before the modern Europeans got here.
Eons before they ever got here.
Mm-hmm.
They never discovered this place. They rediscovered a place that they had forgotten about. And there are a lot of accountings. You know, when you go in and try to trace this thing, because you're doing it as an archaeologist, and you're trying to reference points, you're trying to reference historical documents, you're trying to reference everything that can give you fact to put a jigsaw puzzle together.
Mm-hmm.
And what you come up with is that in the journals of the Spanish conquistadors themselves, they talk about the native people coming up to them with crosses, okay? They talk about native people showing them sacred temples where they would have alabaster statues of a bearded god with long hair and white robes, because it was alabaster, so it was white, but with his hands outstretched. And they looked at this as blasphemy and paganism and some sort of trick of the devil. And then, of course, nobody could possibly have outdone the Europeans as far as architecture. It was impossible for them to have a superior architecture, and so it was basically denied, and yet the architecture here was way in advance of anything of equal period to anything that was in the Euro-Mediterranean area. Okay, I'm not talking about Gothic architecture like Notre Dame in France. I'm talking about, if you go back to the Romans, the Carthaginians, the Egyptians, the Sumerians, the architecture here was equal, at least, if not superior, in technology and mathematics.
You're talking about some real heavy-duty mysteries here, and, you know, this information, I don't know, it's not approached very well in schools, because it's not, hasn't been really, really well understood. And then, a guy like you, or a guy like our common friend Three Eagles, or other people, they step forward and try to solve the mysteries. And, you know, what's the first thing that happens? The first thing that happens is, you know, you get called everything but a son of God. And, you know,
I have a long list of words that I put in my Mark Twain book.
Well, yeah, you know, and there's that old saying about how many phases does truth go through? You know, first it rejected as being silly, and I can't remember, but, you know, eventually, you know, truth eventually wins out, usually after the lifetime of the investigator.
You know, I still like Mark Twain, who said that a lie could travel that way around the world, while truth is just getting its shoes on.
I'll see you.
Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments.
Hi, friends. This is Blue Water. Ayurvedic medicine is also called Ayurveda. It's a system of medicine that originated in India several thousand years ago. The term Ayurveda combines two Sanskrit words, Ayur, which means life, and Veda, which means science or knowledge. Ayurveda means the science of life. Ayurveda is a whole medical system which integrates and balances the body, mind, and spirit. Thus, it's considered holistic. This balance is necessary for contentment and good health. While pharmaceutical companies extract active ingredients from plants and sell them as drugs, the benefits of medicinal plants cannot be replicated because their synergistic combination of hundreds of naturally occurring phytochemicals cannot be reproduced in laboratories. This fact has been known to Ayurveda for thousands of years. The benefit comes from using the whole plant, not just the isolated ingredient. Because they contain whole herbs and fruits, Ayurvedic formulas are safer and more effective as opposed to Western formulations, which oftentimes have harmful side effects. We satisfy the health needs of our customers through safe, well-researched, and effective Ayurveda-based remedies using premier quality herbal extracts and sound manufacturing practices. We believe in Ayurveda so much, we're willing to offer you a 110% money-back guarantee. So be sure and visit india-herbs.us today and find out what this is all about. Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments. Folks, the scriptures say, "My people perish for lack of knowledge." We live in a world that's becoming more and more dangerous as time goes by. Millions of people are aware of this fact now and are actively preparing. Back in 2004, the folks here at Prophecy Keepers Foundation foresaw this situation and began preparing information for you. Friends, I seriously suggest that you head over to prophecykeepers.info and take a look at the Prophecy Keepers Trilogy and Preparedness Library. The Prophecy Keepers Trilogy is a 1,000-page intelligence briefing. The trilogy is a sum total of many years of collecting, collating, analyzing, and comparing prophecies from all over the planet. Mad Bear Anderson predicted that someone would do exactly what we have done. Mad Bear passed into spirit in 1985 before he could realize his dream of collecting and comparing prophecies from all over the world. He said in his biography, "Someday someone will collect all the native people's prophecies, myths, and legends and would publish them in one place so they could be compared with those of all native peoples worldwide, and then we really will have something." And friends, you'll be absolutely shocked to find out that we discovered exactly what that something was that Mad Bear wanted everyone to know. As it turns out, that certain special something that Mad Bear was searching for in the prophecies has everything to do with your physical safety and how to protect it. Now folks, there's absolutely nothing available on the planet like this collection. You'll receive instant access to the Prophecy Keeper's Wisdom Treasury Vault. This is a huge 4.88 gigabyte library, 3,287 files in 222 folders. You'll also receive direct access to links that will allow you to download all past Prophecy Keepers interviews. Now folks, I won't kid you, Prophecy Keepers does need money to continue to operate. So please head on over to prophecykeepers.info and take a look.
Keepers of great wisdom, truth of other times, let the wind blow.
Well, I know I bought into the rumor, innuendo, and slander about you until that same kind of stuff started happening to me. When people started saying things about me, and they still are, things that I never dreamt that anybody would say about anybody, much less me, the light began to dawn on me. What is going on here? What is it that I'm doing that people... Yeah. What is it? So, you know, I went through, you know, a long period of time where, you know, you were hands off to me. And then when it hit the fan with me, with several different people here in this area, that, you know, so I guess I became a comrade in arms with you and began to understand and, you know, eventually contacted you.
Well,
and,
you know, I think a lot of that was a misinterpretation of people who thrive on gossip and malicious slander. But they never get the facts straight, okay? And you go back to years ago when I was a teenager, for crying out loud, and I was in trouble, and, you know, I got arrested, I was put in jail, I mean, you know, like a lot of American kids. And, you know, I guess it depends on the crowd you're with, you know. If you're playing playing music with Willie Nelson and people, well, they don't talk to you unless you've been locked up in jail at least once.
Because the cops listen to that kind of music.
Yeah, you know, and it's like, okay, you know, and then I spent my life developing my education, getting my degrees, because people did not understand from where I was coming from. And I was taught in very specific ways by elders. And part of what I was taught, Will, was that I should not read the books. If I read the books, I'm going to have to get rid of all that stuff that I put into my mind.
Making a noise in this world, making a noise in this world. You can bet your ass.
What I should do is go through ceremony. I should talk to the elders and talk to people firsthand and get the story that way. So my approach to all this was very radical, because I wasn't coming from that Judeo-Christian European background. I was coming from Ketua elders that were telling me about things in the mountains of Carolina, about caves, about plates, about writings, about knowledge that they had that they had brought here. You know, I was being shown things by Mayan elders that didn't make any sense at all. I mean, sculptures of bearded guys with it almost looked like a sack hat, like the kind of thing you'd see a French fur trapper wearing.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And I'd look and I go, well, who are these people? And they would go, well, they're Cherokees. And I go, what? And they would go, yeah, they're Cherokees that came down here. There was a lot of commerce, and Cherokees originally came from the land of the sun, and they were seamen. I said seamen, okay.
Mm-hmm.
Like the Basque, they knew how to navigate. They said, yeah, the Cherokees have always had a knowledge of the stars and the heavens. And they're very closely related in knowledge to the Mayan. And there was a lot of back and forth exchange between them. You know, like years ago, if you go back to the Miami Circle, which nobody ever got the real story, the real story was covered up before it even hit the press. Everything was sanitized. But, I mean, I have artifacts, and I have pictures on my website of artifacts that came from there that were like of a carved lion's tooth with Celtic symbols on it, with Futhark or what you call Viking letters on them. And this is a lion's tooth. Well, you know, to give me a break, the Quest Indians didn't have that. They were Aboriginal people that ran around eight bugs and eight clams that were on the shore. They were not architects. They were not mathematicians. They didn't possibly have a connection to the mathematics of what happened down there in that circle and how that was constructed, which has identical architectural mathematics in Bimini off Bermuda. That was discovered in the 60s, for crying out loud, by Dr. David Zink.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he wrote a book called The Stone Speak, The Sacred Stone Speak. And he had found the Bimini Road down there off Bermuda way back in the 60s, and God knows he suffered all sorts of criticisms because he was coming up against the fold of what everyone said. And the other thing, I think, which has to be taken into account is that the European mindset never took the seriousness and the authenticity of our oral tradition. And the oral tradition was actually set up so that things would not get twisted over time. If we go all the way back into it, the oral traditions were spoken in the original tongue. And when we go to like the Algonquin people, they had over 10,000 enunciations of words. Each different nuance meant it was a male, it was a female, it was a warrior, it was what, how it was said. And each person in the tribe was the storyteller, the storykeeper, the daykeeper, had a different part of it. They were essentially living book. And the word could not be altered over time because it wouldn't fit. Understand? You had a language that was a very specific language that was based on verbs, not nouns. And it was also based upon mathematics. The ancient languages were very much so based on mathematics, which is why, as we get into a lot of the decipherment of the ancient archaic tongues, we can't figure out what they say, and we cannot decipher them because they come from a whole different perception. And you would be better off trying to relate it to music, because mathematically, music has notes, and their language has notes. They have specific sounds. So as they set different things with the different tones, different harmonics would happen. And it would open up not only portals or sepulchres, but it would also open up portions of the mind, because the tone opens it up into the memory. And this is the way that the old ones here, you know, before the conquest, this is how they communicated for thousands and thousands of years. It's like, you know, how long did we live under the false premise that all civilization began 5,000 years ago? And yet, today, we know that that's not a reality at all. I mean, we've got things here that are 10,000, 15,000, 8,000 years old in America that couldn't possibly be here. We have Roman plates. We have Egyptian sculptures. We have Phoenician writings. We have things that couldn't possibly have been here according to that old paradigm.
Well, the Cherokee, we had plates. We had an ark that was guarded 24 hours a day. And
like the Mayans, the Cherokees were one of the civilized tribes. They taught the barbarians from Europe how to live civilized. Because these people had no idea, no concept of freedom and self-government. They had none. They came from many, many generations of servitude and enslavement to feudal systems. They literally did not know how to govern themselves. And, you know, I'm not going to get into that whole thing, but it's like, you know, the Constitution of the United States is a Haudenosaunee Algonquin document.
That's right. Except
the reason why it didn't work,
they left out the women.
They left out the women, and they left out the equality of all these different bodies talking with each other and having commonality.
They left out the women, and they left in the slaves.
Yeah, because that made sense to them. And they didn't want the young women to have political power. And yet everything that we, the older that I seem to go back with these civilizations, well, they were basically matriarchies. And one of the things that you'll find, if you go through a lot of the documents and even some of the pictures I have up on my website about different things, is there's many, many references to the goddess. There's many, many references to the feminine. And personally, I started to get it as to why they were so passionate about shutting, silencing these things up. I mean, I'm not the only one, and you know it because you know some of us in the circle. I'm not the only one who's come across with these things. And you can't come across these things unless you're into a network. And one person knows another person that knows another one that knows an elder here that knows an elder down there that knows an elder down in South America. And you get to see all the pieces put together.
And it's almost impossible to break into the network because of, well, you know, some people, they don't trust you. They won't trust you for years and years and years. And I'll tell you, frankly, I'll tell you, after what I've been through, Robert, I can understand why I was offended, you know, years ago when, you know, a certain guy said, well, you know, I don't trust you, you know, you know, that kind of puts you off because you know you're trustworthy, but they don't. They, you know, they got to watch you for years. So the, you know, this information doesn't, it, the information doesn't, it did not come easily to you. and the elders trusted you. I mean, everybody out there on the internet that slanders you says you shouldn't be trusted, but the elders trust you, and, you know, that's the proof of the pudding.
Yeah, well, it's a very old relationship now. I'm the old man of the mouth now. That's all that ever mattered to me. All that ever mattered to me is I could go wherever I had to go and sit down with the elders in almost any circle that I have to be in. And the doors are always open. They're still open. People on the internet, for the most part, they don't know from whence they come. And they build little worlds over things that don't even exist. And you don't know where somebody's coming from when they do something on the internet. They create a whole fantasy world. And the questions are always, well, who are you? Where are you coming from? These are the things that elders always ask me.
Yeah.
Back in the old days, when you had to go up to grandfather's house for like a year and a half, and every time you went up there, sometimes he talked to you, and sometimes he wouldn't talk to you. And most of the time you chopped wood, you shoveled horse shit, or fixed his car. And you never complained. You never said the guy was a mean old guy. You never called him names. Because that's what it was. And over the years, he got to know you. He got to know what could trigger you. He got to know, you know, when you went by a place and you found something, did you pick it up and look at it and put it back? Or did you pick it up and try to sneak it and put it in your pocket? And these are all things that they watch, and I know that you're aware of this.
Well, and then too, they have to see, spirit doesn't give out information easily either. Spirit doesn't do its thinking for you, and if a person's going to, an elder's going to watch you for a while, then they're going to ask questions of themselves, and sometimes they'll ask spirit questions, you know, and so it takes a while to get to know what you think you know about somebody. Then you go to spirit, and spirit can really help you understand somebody a lot more.
Yes. And the initiations never stop. You just get to deeper levels of it. And it's totally understandable, because we're dealing with technologies, cosmology, that is tens of thousands of years old, that has been carried now, you know, from generation to generation. When we talk about, you know, when everyone started to become, in the 60s and the 70s, familiar with Native Americanism, you know, everybody wanted to go out and get moccasins and beat drums and run away, and, you know, it was a very romantic thing. But it was hard, and you just didn't get in. And nobody had any idea, again, because of the gap of understanding and sharing of actual information of what had transpired for seven generations that made people so hostile, that made them so angry. You know, in America, we all had cars and TV, and we were watching things and listening to, you know, American Bandstand and people on the radio, with submarine race watchers, Bill Haley and the Comets and Elvis Presley, you know. Not realizing that half those people were Mente people. How do you like that? Elvis Presley, king of rock and roll, the greatest of the great, the king of all of them. He was in Cherokee.
I'll see you.
Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments. Hi, this is Will Bluewater speaking on behalf of Native Remedies. As the systems of the body are interrelated, proper functioning and health occurs when they are in balance and harmony, so it's important to consider taking a holistic approach to caring for your body. Provided that they are manufactured in the correct way, natural medicines can work quickly and safely to create holistic balance in the body to support systemic health, relieve ailments, and help prevent future disease. Most natural remedies do not produce negative side effects, and unlike conventional medicine, natural remedies do not just mask symptoms, but they get to the root of the problem to support health and affect healing at the same time. Most homeopathics are even safely taken by people of all ages and during pregnancy. Homeopathic medicine is actually suppressed here in the United States. Outside of this country, a large majority of medicines that are prescribed are homeopathics. Did you know that the cure for malaria was developed by the man that invented the homeopathic system? That's right. So friends, please take my advice. Visit the front page of prophecykeepers.com and click on the Native Remedies banner and find out what all the excitement's all about.
Prophecy Keeper, Prophecy Keeper.
I'll see you.
Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments. Folks, the scriptures say, "My people perish for lack of knowledge." We live in a world that's becoming more and more dangerous as time goes by. Millions of people are aware of this fact now and are actively preparing. Back in 2004, the folks here at Prophecy Keepers Foundation foresaw this situation and began preparing information for you. Friends, I seriously suggest that you head over to prophecykeepers.info and take a look at the Prophecy Keepers Trilogy and Preparedness Library. The Prophecy Keepers Trilogy is a 1,000-page intelligence briefing. The trilogy is a sum total of many years of collecting, collating, analyzing, and comparing prophecies from all over the planet. Mad Bear Anderson predicted that someone would do exactly what we have done. Mad Bear passed into spirit in 1985 before he could realize his dream of collecting and comparing prophecies from all over the world. He said in his biography, "Someday someone will collect all the native people's prophecies, myths, and legends and would publish them in one place so they could be compared with those of all native peoples worldwide, and then we really will have something." And friends, you'll be absolutely shocked to find out that we discovered exactly what that something was that Mad Bear wanted everyone to know. As it turns out, that certain special something that Mad Bear was searching for in the prophecies has everything to do with your physical safety and how to protect it. Now folks, there's absolutely nothing available on the planet like this collection. You'll receive instant access to the Prophecy Keeper's Wisdom Treasury Vault. This is a huge 4.88 gigabyte library, 3,287 files in 222 folders. You'll also receive direct access to links that will allow you to download all past Prophecy Keeper's interviews. Now folks, I won't kid you, Prophecy Keeper's does need money to continue to operate. So please head on over to prophecykeepers.info and take a look.
Keepers of great wisdom, truth of other times, let the wind blow.
Yeah, he was a Cherokee descendant.
And that was all part of his charm. But, you know, these were things that were unspoken. In my elders' time, if you had Native American roots, you didn't talk about it. You changed your name to Smith or Billings or whoever the local prominent guy was in town. You know, you changed the name. You hid everything. So we go back in time and we have all these broken links. We have all these people with an incomplete history of where they came from. And I can't tell you how many thousands, and I mean thousands, have come up to me over the years, and that chain's been broken. And so they don't know where they stand. And, you know, it's a deep tragedy. It's an emotional thing that we are now in the 21st century coming through the other side of it, simply because of, and this may be totally conjecture on my part, but I know a lot of elders that will tell you the same story. Years and years, generations ago, they knew that everything was connected to the bloodlines, and that if they kept the bloodlines healthy, and they kept them open rather than line breeding, and they bred out, and they brought new blood in, and they kept the bloodline going, what would happen is that when the time came in the future of solar year, and other people call it the sixth solar year, so it depends on who you're going to. I ride with the Mayans. The Hopi, so to me, is going into the fifth age now. But that there would be a paradigm shift. And in this paradigm shift, the physics of everything would change, and we would start to awaken. And that is starting to happen now, and it's part of what's creating the chaos in this time. We have a lot of chaos right now, all over the world, on every level, in every structure that we ever set up, socially, religiously, economically, politically, just as it was predicted. How many years ago? How many generations ago? Well, did we find out the stories? Because, you know, our generation had the time, or at least my generation had the time, because you're only a baby. But my generation had the time to sit down and talk to these elders who aren't here anymore. They were the ones who were the bridge between the old way, when they got up every day and they did their ceremonies every day, and their way of life was not totally destroyed. I remember in 1994, in a television interview on NBC, they asked me, I was doing a ceremony in Arizona with, I don't know, there was a lot of people there, Hopis and Apaches, Kiowas, and they said, well, what do you see happening, goes Wolf? And I said, what I see happening is that it, just like what happened to the native people here in less than one generation, their entire world was gone. And what you're going to see right now is that in less than one generation, the entire reality that you know will no longer be the same. And you're going to go to the native people to help you cope with it, because they've already coped with it. You won't know what hit you. Because they think they're immortal. They think that their way of life is never going to end. They think that they're the greatest technological civilization that ever lived, and anything but that is the truth. You know, the ancient ones here had knowledge that they still can't figure out. And nobody's going to tell me that they took clam shells and little flintstones and carved these rocks to such precision when they built their structures that you can't even put a piece of tissue paper between them.
Yeah, that's right.
I mean, they still can't do that. And show me the engineering company that can build a duplicated pyramid.
Nothing. There isn't anything today that can do that.
How did they get water to go uphill? The old ones here did. You go through Arizona, you go to the Havasupai area, and you can see where they moved the water from the creeks up the hill to where the village was. How did they do that? So, and as we get more and more into this stuff, we find out that, well, there's nothing new about, you know, UFOs. There's nothing new. As a matter of fact, UFOs, we really don't know anything about today, because back then, everybody knew about them. Here's the schematics. Here's Quetzalcoatl. Here's Kukulkan. They're flying in their machines. And it was common knowledge. If you go to some of the codexes, the ancient Mayan codices, there's whole stories there about that part of our knowledge, our science, and our life. And so, the civilization that we have today is technically ignorant. It relies upon mechanized machinery. It doesn't rely upon human intelligence. And the intelligence of not only understanding how a machine works, but understanding how the spirit world works. How the other paradigm, how the other dimension works in conjunction with this. The elders here understood all of that on an everyday basis. It was common knowledge.
So they were, now, from what I've been able to gather, the Anunnaki, their main headquarters was set up over there in what's now Iraq, but there was also a little colony over here. And so one of those guys was...
you would understand that when you're using the term Anunnaki, you're using their expression. Just so that we know that. In other words, Anunnaki are reptilian, genetically rooted people, right? As far as our explanations go today.
Mm-hmm.
And they were hybrids, okay? Anunnakis were not Nephilim, okay? Anunnakis were part human and part something else. They were a hybrid race. And they intermingled with the ancient father races here. And if we go back here, see, the amazing thing about the Western Hemisphere is that regardless of what happened, regardless of the destruction, regardless of the conquest, and the conquistadors were despicable. I mean, they anything that happens today that's horrible in Iraq or Iraq, they outdid, okay, as far as destruction and devastation and total genocide over here, including with the blessing of the Church of Rome, I might say, because that was all blessed by the papal bulls. History doesn't lie, it's over.
And yeah, kill them all, God will sort them out.
By the thousands. They came in by the thousands and wiped them out. Because they didn't want to hear something. Which was, never mind the goddess part, just the other part of it. The other part that they didn't want to hear was that Jesus, Yah, Yeshua, Yeshua, was here. The prophet was here. So when they came with their books, they said, this is a really interesting thing that you have, because this talks about our prophet. And, you know, the drama here is just an extended story of what happened. And, yeah, I mean, I still get a lot of stones thrown at me, because when you're asking people to stretch beyond what they've been told, and that's the case, what they've been told, not what they found out. Beyond what they've been told, dogmatic teaching, is that, you know, this whole existence of this one divine entity existed right here in this three-year period. And everything that's been written and everything's been done and every war that ever happened over a three-year period. And yet the very words that were said, which we now know on a lot of occasions were altered and edited, he told them point blank, you know, there are many mansions in my father's house. There are other sheep that I must go to and gather them. And I'm not doing the Christian preaching thing. I am a Christian minister, but I'm not doing that. I'm talking straight historical fact. And the writings about this person, which is another thing. When I grew up, I was always told, look at the rock art. They go, rock art. And I'd look at it, you know, and isn't it amazing that they were here for how many, 300 years, 400 years? If they were Spanish, they were here for 400 years or something. And they looked at this stuff, and they never, in 400 years, learned what they were looking at. They were looking at notes, at writings, at combinations of different languages, all over the place, and our universities, our temples, were built in the woods. They were built in the mountains. They were built in the cathedral of the earth. They were not built in a building. And so they were places because, you know, we're just finding out about ley lines and power grids and the feasibility of Tesla technology, which was done back when. You've had someone on your show, Ron Pastore, who does a lot of work with that stuff. All of these cities, all of these settlements, they were all built on grid lines. One connected to another, and it's how energy moved, and we understood the earth then. We don't understand anything now except that the computer just locked up.
Well, the first time ley lines were mentioned was in a book that was written in 1853 called The Traditions of Dekuda, and the lines were revealed by Dekuda, who was the last prophet of the Elk Nation. They were Algonquin-speaking people. but the concept was revealed to William Pigeon. And Pigeon was surveying the mounds area, and you know, his book was in fashion for a while, and then for a long time, you know, it was, you know, decried and laughed at, but I think it's going to make a comeback.
I think it's already made the comeback.
Yeah, you know, his book is now going to enter the that final phase where truth is finally recognized for what it is.
You know, the whole thing is here that the truth will set us free. And the elders have been telling us the truth from the beginning. They have no reason not to. They've never had a reason not to. Things change, presidents come, wars come, television shows change, music changes, but they're still telling us the same things. You know, when the Hopi would always say to me, you know, we have to go back, and when Masah comes, when the Blue Star Kachina comes, they're coming to observe us. They're coming to see who remembers the original teachings. And I used to walk around and go, what's the original teachings? You know, and back in the days when I was learning, I used to think that there was a special Indian school, and all elders went there, and they were taught how to tell you things in riddles. you were never told anything straight out. You were always told a riddle. You know, everything was always J.R. Tolkien, you know. Well, go here, Frodo, and find this piece, and you'll know where the next thing is. And it's like, okay, why don't you just tell me the story, you know? And I understand that now. Because that, in teaching us in that way, they forced us, in the first place, it was a natural filtration system. Because if you didn't have the stick-to-itiveness, if you didn't stay with it, you wouldn't get it. And you had to go beyond this paradigm and this way of thinking to a place where you didn't know which was north and which was south and what was right and what was wrong, and you were so far into a state of confusion, so to speak, that you were in a state of openness. And in the openness, you would find out.
Well, how long have the Christians had their Bible?
Which Bible?
400 or 500 years now, the Gutenberg.
You know, the Gutenberg Bible is a King James Bible. And all the way back to Rome when they decided to put a Bible together, because the Roman emperors decided that, well, you know, we can't do anything about this new Christian movement here, which wasn't called the Christian movement. It was first dubbed Christian in a place called Antioch by the Roman emperor, and it was sort of a colloquial phrase because they believed in a Christ. So they came up with a phraseology called Christian. But before then, they were considered Essenes.
Well, the reason why I asked the question is you know, you were talking about how they teach in parables.
My teachings today basically all go back to a time around the 1500s.
Okay,
between the 1500s and the 1600s. In the 1600s, we came out with the King James Bible, which put the texts, the teachings of the Bible, into common vernacular.
Right, so it's been, you know...
Before then, it was only in Latin.
It's been 350, 400 years that people that call themselves followers of Christ have had the Bible.
Tell me your great secrets deep inside your heart.
I'll see you.
Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments. Folks, the scriptures say, my people perish for lack of knowledge. We live in a world that's becoming more and more dangerous as time goes by. Millions of people are aware of this fact now and are actively preparing. Back in 2004, the folks here at Prophecy Keepers Foundation foresaw this situation and began preparing information for you. Friends, I seriously suggest that you head over to prophecykeepers.info and take a look at the Prophecy Keepers Trilogy and Preparedness Library. The Prophecy Keepers Trilogy is a 1,000-page intelligence briefing. The trilogy is a sum total of many years of collecting, collating, analyzing, and comparing prophecies from all over the planet. Mad Bear Anderson predicted that someone would do exactly what we have done. Mad Bear passed into spirit in 1985 before he could realize his dream of collecting and comparing prophecies from all over the world. He said in his biography, "Someday someone will collect all the native people's prophecies, myths, and legends and would publish them in one place so they could be compared with those of all native peoples worldwide, and then we really will have something." And friends, you'll be absolutely shocked to find out that we discovered exactly what that something was that Mad Bear wanted everyone to know. As it turns out, that certain special something that Mad Bear was searching for in the prophecies has everything to do with your physical safety and how to protect it. Now folks, there's absolutely nothing available on the planet like this collection. You'll receive instant access to the Prophecy Keeper's Wisdom Treasury Vault. This is a huge 4.88 gigabyte library, 3,287 files in 222 folders. You'll also receive direct access to links that will allow you to download all past Prophecy Keepers interviews. Now folks, I won't kid you, Prophecy Keepers does need money to continue to operate. So please head on over to prophecykeepers.info and take a look.
Keepers of great wisdom, truth of other times, let the wind blow.
But why, how is it then that these people, well, there's a few movements that call themselves Christian that actually teach the way of life that Christ taught, which was all things common. Amish people, Hutterites, the Mormons tried it for a while and couldn't hack it, and 2 years before he died in 1875, Brigham Young said that the Mormons could have redeemed Zion, and I'm not talking about Zionism, but they could have had, they could have set up their all things common system and been under divine protection within 2 years of their arrival in the Salt Lake Valley. So by, 1849, they could have been divinely protected and fed. But that, he said, you didn't want it. He says, you were too busy with your farms and your businesses. And now we still have people like Edgar Casey that are saying that the kind of communism that Jesus taught is the correct way of life. And the Urantia book talks about how someday this idea of living all things common, which is far from communism, will catch on and will spread over the entire face of the earth. And like I say, people call themselves Christians, and they call themselves followers of Christ, and they didn't even recognize Christ's teachings when they saw them. When they got over here to the Americas and they saw what the Indians had, they resented it and they killed them for it.
Well, they were greatly intimidated by a truth that they couldn't deal with.
Yeah, well, that's not to say the Indians had it perfect either, because, they were warring over here too. Yeah, there's...
They had their problems with each other.
Yeah, sure.
I mean, if they weren't warring with each other, they never would have been defeated. They couldn't have been defeated. They were, as far as a warrior goes, okay, they were superior on an individual basis. But, I don't care how good you are on a horse, what can you do against Gatling guns?
Yeah.
Okay. What can you do against bio warfare?
Yeah.
What can you do when they give you smallpox blankets and it wipes out? I mean, before the first shot was fired, the indigenous people lost over 30 million people to disease.
Well, the point I was trying to make is that the Hopi prophecy and teachings are really clear that the white man was sent here to learn something from the red man and vice versa. And the red man knew the white man was coming. They even knew there would be different waves of white men. They would be able to tell them apart by the kind of hat that they wore.
Right.
And when it finally came down to when they brought the cross, the Hopi knew that when they saw the lopsided cross that had one leg longer than the other, that there was going to be trouble. Because they were told that if the people came carrying a cross more like the Celtic cross, which is the cross like you see in the old, well, in Britain, a lot of way markers and even some ancient graves, I guess, have
which is more likened to an ankh than a cross.
Right.
It's like a cross over an ankh. The ankh being the Egyptian symbol.
An equilateral cross. They knew that if the people carried it more like a Celtic cross, that they would be more balanced in their outlook. And, you know, they were even told that the people that finally did come and settle around them, which ended up being Mormons, would be kind people, but that they still caused problems for them. And it's all been the truth. It's all been fulfilled. And,
you know, we have a million stories to tell. I'm just one of a million or more stories that can be told.
Tragic how such a small deviation from a basic principle can cause all that pain and confusion as time goes on, because what you're saying,
well,
did not accept and embrace living in commonality, you know. And I'm not going to go into the fact that, like the Constitution, everything that the Mormons built everything on came from Joseph John Mormon. And John Mormon was an Indian. He was an Algonquin Indian. Okay. He gave the information to Joseph Smith. He opened the doorways to the ancient caves. He opened the whole passageway back to history. Again, it was given by a Native person. And as we go through that whole mythology, everything was about, yes, there's a lot of Christ in America. Well, they got that from the Native people. And they talk about the Paradise Land, which they feel is in South America, which probably was. It was probably a Paradise Land. I mean, when I talked to the Mayan elders about what was it like, and I was raised in the North Shore of Long Island as a small child in upstate New York, okay? So coming from New York, I always ask bold questions. Like, how come you didn't have a wheel? I mean, you built these things that are so amazing. You can calculate down to, you know, almost within 16 inches on Mars where something is sitting, and you did that back then without the Hubble telescope. How come you didn't have a wheel? And they said, well, we had a wheel. But you know what? The wheels, and there are Mayan toys that have wheels, okay? And I said, well, okay, so if you had the wheel, why didn't you have chariots? And I remember Humboldt's man saying to me, we didn't need them. I said, what do you mean, didn't need them? And he spoke about whenever you were inside a major city, let's say, which they weren't cities. Like, when people go today, and they go to Chichen Itza, and they go to Uxmal, and they go to Palenque, those were not cities. Those were universities. The cities were outside the universities, okay? Where the people lived, where they did their everyday stuff, where they got rid of their excrement and their trash, was never inside those areas. So what does that tell you? Okay, besides the fact that it's always curious that they never had any prisons.
That they were sacred areas.
And right, and inside these, I'm going to call them universities because that's what they were, inside these sacred areas, okay, the streets used to be caged. I said, what do you mean caged? Well, they would make nets. And they would have all these flora in them. And they would have all of these birds. And you would move through these streets, and you, I said, okay, I said, wait a minute, I said, what you're telling me, I said, let me get this right, what you're telling me is that basically you guys almost levitated. Is that what you're saying? Is that how you got from Chichen Itza to the Serpent Mound in Ohio on the Mayan Road, and we know that that road exists, right? Because we've seen all these, I mean, it's as big as I-90, or I-70, I mean, it's that wide. And it goes all the way up to Ohio. Giant stones, perfectly put in place. Why were they put there? And he said yes. And so, as we get into, again, here's another example of a technology that we once knew, that we were once connected with, and that's why I call us gods in amnesia.
Mm-hmm.
We are gods in amnesia who no longer know where we came from. We no longer know our potentiality, and this is what we're waking up to. We're waking up to this, and a lot of the stuff that's happening is definitely not New Age, because New Age burns out in 6 weeks. We're going back into the old ways. We're remembering the old ways, the Mayan stories about how they sent their solar priests into the future for this time. And they call this time the time of the initiation. The Hopis call it the time of the purification. The Mayans refer to this basically as the time of initiation, if we're speaking about what we're going through, okay? They also speak of it as the time of the emergence, because we emerge from this catatonic state to an awareness that enables us to access the higher level of understanding. And I think the simplest way to understand that is that my grandfathers would have never understood half the things that you and I talk about on the phone.
Mm-hmm.
They would just sit there and go, uh-huh, okay.
Oh, that's right, you're crazy. Well, it's like when I interviewed Chakosh, she was telling me that when John Lanza took her down and showed her Prophecy Rock and showed her some of the other things around that area, we're going back 35 years here, you know, to the early and mid 60s, even I guess it's even further back, 35 years, 40 years ago. Uh huh. And she said that that John, who was an old man, his brother Mike was chief of Arrive, and she noticed that you can't walk anywhere Hopi, you know, there's a lot of rocks and small stones, and you know, it's always ooh, ow, ow, ooh, you know, and your shoulders are reacting, you know, because your feet are hurting, and she noticed that. Well, she noticed that John wasn't having any problems. His shoulders weren't moving when he was walking. And she looked down, and he was walking, gliding about a half an inch off the ground. Uh-huh.
Yeah, I believe that.
I wonder if they could do that with their carts and their horses. You know, maybe that's why they didn't need wheels. They just built lead.
Well, it is pretty amazing when you realize how many thousands of miles that the roads went up. They were constructed during the time of the Toltec Mayan. They were constructed during the time of Quetzalcoatl. And those timelines get confused. When our modern academians try to analyze it, because if you just take the basic timeline, Quetzalcoatl lived for 800 years. And they go, well, how could he have lived for 800 years? Well, if you're looking at him as a human, like the rest of us, well, then, yeah, okay, maybe there was a problem and he couldn't have done it, but our ancestors lived that long, didn't they? I mean, if you go to the Bible,
mm-hmm.
It says that Abraham was 600 years old when he had his son. Okay? So our ancestors lived that long. But if we go to the Native American story about Quetzalcoatl, the Pale Prophet, well, then that would mean that he was Yeshua Sananda, which would mean Sananda, which was the Tibetan terminology of the name that he took, meaning the ascended one, okay, the one who had ascended. And if he came here, well, then that would mean he was immortal, so why wouldn't it be 800 years old?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, says right there.
That's right.
It's like, what happened? You know, I used to... This is why people don't like me sometimes, Will. Because I ask logical questions.
Well, you confuse them with the truth.
Well, if the guy... You know, this little Aramaic guy who was fairly dark-skinned, he wasn't a Nordic blonde, you know, came out of the tomb and he arose and he ascended. How could that possibly be the end of the story? Then he just disappeared. He just vanished. It makes no sense. See?
Well,
no sense. Something happened after that, and he told them what happened.
Well, yeah, he told them, and there is an account in the Book of Mormon. See, the people that kept the record that were translated and eventually became the Book of Mormon, which is not to be confused with the Book of Mormon that people have in their hands today. There are a few people who have the original. That it doesn't have 10,000 changes in it, but there is an account. Number one, they were told that they would know that when their God had been crucified, that there would be 3 days and nights of darkness, which is something that is prophesied to happen again in the future. And when this period of time came over here in this hemisphere, there were no fires. You couldn't see anything. It was a time of sheer terror. And they said there were great earthquakes. And they said that all of a sudden that there was a light that appeared in the sky, and it got brighter and brighter and brighter. And as the light got closer, they said they could see that it was a man. And that he arrived and touched down in their city, which was in ruins. And let the children come forward and taught them and healed them, and the Cherokee speak during the same time period when a man walked across water and redirected I believe it was a water spout away from them, and otherwise people would have been killed.
Which is why he was called the God of the Wind.
Yeah, the God of Wind and Water. And they asked him, well, you know, what should we call you? And he said, I don't care. You know, that you're calling the God of Wind and Water. And then, you know, people, and then Cherokees today laugh. 99% of them just laugh you to derision when you bring this up, because they don't know their own culture. They don't know their own history. They've been Christianized. They have become so accepted, you know, in this culture that they're now part of the same problem. And, you know, we get people on like Clifford Alford, who is an Ottawahee, who has been taught, you know, what our history was. And you get people accusing him of this and that and the other, the worst thing you can accuse somebody of is that he's running sweats and, you know, letting people come in nude, you know, which is a lie, but that's one person's accusing. And all it takes is one person to accuse you of that, and all of a sudden it's the truth.
Keepers of great wisdom, truth of other times, let the wind blow.
Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments. Folks, the scriptures say, my people perish for lack of knowledge. We live in a world that's becoming more and more dangerous as time goes by. Millions of people are aware of this fact now and are actively preparing. Back in 2004, the folks here at Prophecy Keepers Foundation foresaw this situation and began preparing information for you. Friends, I seriously suggest that you head over to prophecykeepers.info and take a look at the Prophecy Keepers Trilogy and Preparedness Library. The Prophecy Keepers Trilogy is a 1,000-page intelligence briefing. The trilogy is a sum total of many years of collecting, collating, analyzing, and comparing prophecies from all over the planet. Mad Bear Anderson predicted that someone would do exactly what we have done. Mad Bear passed into spirit in 1985 before he could realize his dream of collecting and comparing prophecies from all over the world. He said in his biography, "Someday someone will collect all the native people's prophecies, myths, and legends and would publish them in one place so they could be compared with those of all native peoples worldwide, and then we really will have something." And friends, you'll be absolutely shocked to find out that we discovered exactly what that something was that Mad Bear wanted everyone to know. As it turns out, that certain special something that Mad Bear was searching for in the prophecies has everything to do with your physical safety and how to protect it. Now folks, there's absolutely nothing available on the planet like this collection. You'll receive instant access to the Prophecy Keeper's Wisdom Treasury Vault. This is a huge 4.88 gigabyte library, 3,287 files in 222 folders. You'll also receive direct access to links that will allow you to download all past Prophecy Keeper's interviews. Now folks, I won't kid you, Prophecy Keeper's does need money to continue to operate. So please head on over to prophecykeepers.info and take a look.
Keepers of great wisdom, truth of other times, let the wind blow.
Yeah, well, the most recent thing on the net about me is now I'm a sex criminal, you know. And actually what's happened is this guy that's been after me for a few years, he's got me confused with somebody I used to know, but that doesn't matter to him because he just folded us into the same person, you know. And it's just crazy. But these accounts, you know, they're in the Book of Mormon, and, you know, lots of people joined, you know, the churches that are associated with the Book of Mormon, But just like any truth, you know, people are, you know, Joseph Smith was human, and he made some mistakes, and, you know, God kept telling him, hey, if you don't quit listening to these men, the church is going to go into condemnation, and you're going to fall. And, he wouldn't stop listening, and he got involved with, yeah, he got involved in some different teachings, and
that's why I don't like churches, because churches,
yeah,
churches sacrifice spirituality for the sake of the politics.
Yeah, he got to.
And God doesn't compromise.
Well, if you read it originally, see the original Book of Mormon makes it very, very clear there's only one God. But, you know, the Mormons, you know, out west, they still can talk about the Father and the Son and the Holy Ghost, and there's been so many changes that have been made, it is absolutely unrecognizable. You know, when I start talking with old Mormon friends about these things, and they say, oh, you're crazy and you're an apostate, I just ask them one question. I say, if the Book of Mormon is supposed to be the fullness of the gospel, then why is your church's priesthood organization completely different than what's in the Book of Mormon? Why aren't you living all things common, which is what the Book of Mormon says you're supposed to do? And then they start blustering, you know, and then I point out to them, and I said, look, I said, these teachings were given to white people for a brief period of time, and the Book of Mormon is very clear that the teachings will be given to them to see what they would do with them. And it also says that, you know, if they didn't do well with them, it said that a time would come when they would be burned. It refers to them as Gentiles, and Joseph Smith did say the church was identified with the Gentiles, but the Book of Mormon says that they came from what's known as the small plates, and there's another, you know, larger group of plates that was never revealed that has much, much, much more information. But the prophecy in the Book of Mormon is that the Gentile peoples will be burned, and after that, that all that information that wasn't revealed will be revealed to whoever is living after the burning of the Gentiles. So, you know, we're looking at, you know, if we're looking at a worldwide nuclear war and some other things, I'm saying, wow, that'll be fun. You know, it's going to be really interesting for the people that survive, because they're going to be privy to a lot of information that's going to be revealed. you know, possibly, I mean, who knows what's going to be revealed?
Well, I think that that's why it's so important right now, for a lot of these truths to come out. There are horrific things that are going to happen, and there are climatic earth changes that are going to occur, and there are those that come from beyond the sun that are already here and that are going to be coming more frequently. The last of the thunder prophecies has everything to do with what we would term extraterrestrial, but it's really got to do with our ancestors, the way it was taught. Chief Dan Evamaya, oldest Hopi. It wasn't until after his passing in 1999 that the prophecies relating to that, I was allowed to bring them out. And I published them, along with another woman, Catherine Cheshire, who were both confident of Dan. But we knew about those things for a decade. But the world wasn't ready for them. They weren't ready for them now.
Reservations
from Canada down to Texas. How come there's such a high suicide rate? But we don't want to deal with those things, right? And yet we have to. How come so many women, more than women, how come so many men are being born sterile? So we're seeing the prophecies playing out. And I don't look at it as, you know, God's my enemy and God's punishing me and I was born to this earth, disturbing purgatory. I believe that this is paradise and we screwed it up.
Yeah, this is just consequences of our own actions.
And it's a stage that we are supposed to go through, just like the caterpillar becomes the butterfly.
Well, you know, people wonder how the Hopi came up with all this stuff, but you know, they've been through this, you know, four times before, so they're just telling the stories over.
The Hopi title is pushed by David Icke.
Yeah, they're just telling the stories over and over again. You know, they know how it all works. It's been a cycle now, and you know, it's all happened before. It's just happening again.
Well, there's a lot of pictures on my website to talk to if you want to go there. At www.robertghostwolf.com, or they can go to wolflodge.org. And there's a section there called Stargate Files.
Mm-hmm.
And in Stargate Files, there are all real pictures. Some of them even include me. I sent you some. With these artifacts and with these giants, that let everybody know that, you know, legend becomes fact. Legend becomes fact. And I think that that's part of the legends of Aslan. The legends of Aslan have to do with my journeys from speaking with and these manuscripts and going around trying to find these halls of record and meeting all sorts of people. I mean, talk about Lord of the Rings.
Mm-hmm.
I was involved in this incredible melodrama. But we found these beings from Bolivia all the way into Canada. Tall beings with tall, elongated skulls. Women between 8 and 9 feet tall, usually. Men between 9 and 14 feet tall. They were beings that had swords. They had armor. They had dragons on their armor breastplates. They wore crowns. They had multiple ways of writing. In other words, the libraries were in fact actually libraries. They had brass plates, copper plates, gold plates, silver plates, lead plates. Some of them were square. Some of them are hooked together with little rings. Others are round, like they look almost donut shaped, okay? With all such, and they've been forensically tested, where they are literally well over 2500 BC. That's the way they officially put it down on paper. And the writings talk about journeys to the stars. They talk about metaphysics. There are depictions of horses. There are depictions of elephants. There are depictions of great ships with masts. There are depictions of ships that look like what we would call giant arcs. They were like barges that they would bring things over. I have found writings in Chinese, ancient Chinese. And you know, when you look at these things, you have to understand what it is you're looking at, because it may be Chinese or it may be Hebrew, but it may come from a totally wrong period. It's like, you know, when you look at a very lot of what comes out of the Dead Sea Scrolls, it's the wrong Hebrew. It's not the Hebrew that would have been written thousands of years before. It was the Hebrew that would have been written from the time of the Crusades on. So that leads us to wonder, right? I mean, sorry guys, it's the wrong alphabet. But the thing's here, this is the amazing thing about the Americas. Despite the devastation, despite all the destruction, despite total destruction, and campaigns of genocide, and that happened in North and South America over the last 500 years. Most of what was salvaged, and they were told again thousands of years before this time, to take your sacred writings and hide them in the hills, bring them in the mountains, because the younger brother is going to come with great destruction, and nothing will be left. And there will be a time that you will need these things. And they will remind you that, you know, story, legend lives on forever. But the mind is something, the human is something that has to see things. When you see these things, when your children's children see these things, they will remember these times. The memory will be awakened. And this is what we're going through right now. And people don't want to bring this out into National Geographic magazine, not because it won't pan out historically or forensically, but because it'll upset the paradigm, and it'll upset the business, because the business of artifacts in this world is controlled by a very small handful of people, and they make their money off Egyptian artifacts and what they're worth. Daniel Brinkley brought some of my stones that I found here in the desert. He brought them over to Egypt. He showed them to Zahi Hawass, who's the head of the Giza Plateau, and the guy who walks around with all of the discoveries of the ancient tombs that he did before he got in there. You know, it's kind of funny. But he got in there. The first thing he accused Daniel of was, where were they stolen from? These were Egyptian. And then he says, well, they were stolen from Colorado. And they didn't have an answer for it. They just went into complete automatic denial. I mean, everything about them went into total denial. And it was like, you know, they couldn't possibly have existed here. And yet, these things are, it's not like they're in one place. You know, and it's not like, you know, somebody came over here with some huge trading caravan and put all this stuff in this place. They're everywhere. And what we're finding out is that they're in more and more and more commonality everywhere. They're in Canada, they're in Bolivia, they're in Colorado, they're in Utah, they're in Arizona, they're in Mexico, they're in Chile, they're in Colombia, and they're in North Carolina, they're in Tennessee, they're in Ohio, they're in Wisconsin. And
be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments.
Hi, this is Will Bluewater speaking on behalf of Native Remedies. As the systems of the body are interrelated, proper functioning and health occurs when they are in balance and harmony, so it's important to consider taking a holistic approach to caring for your body. Provided that they are manufactured in the correct way, natural medicines can work quickly and safely to create holistic balance in the body to support systemic health, relieve ailments, and help prevent future disease. Most natural remedies do not produce negative side effects, and unlike conventional medicine, natural remedies do not just mask symptoms, but they get to the root of the problem to support health and affect healing at the same time. Most homeopathics are even safely taken by people of all ages and during pregnancy. Homeopathic medicine is actually suppressed here in the United States. Outside of this country, a large majority of medicines that are prescribed are homeopathics. Did you know that the cure for malaria was developed by the man that invented the homeopathic system? That's right. So friends, please take my advice. Visit the front page of prophecykeepers.com and click on the Native Remedies banner and find out what all the excitement's all about.
Let the wind blow, let the truth be known.
Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments. Folks, the scriptures say, my people perish for lack of knowledge. We live in a world that's becoming more and more dangerous as time goes by. Millions of people are aware of this fact now and are actively preparing. Back in 2004, the folks here at Prophecy Keepers Foundation foresaw this situation and began preparing information for you. Friends, I seriously suggest that you head over to prophecykeepers.info and take a look at the Prophecy Keepers Trilogy and Preparedness Library. The Prophecy Keepers Trilogy is a 1,000-page intelligence briefing. The trilogy is a sum total of many years of collecting, collating, analyzing, and comparing prophecies from all over the planet. Mad Bear Anderson predicted that someone would do exactly what we have done. Mad Bear passed into spirit in 1985 before he could realize his dream of collecting and comparing prophecies from all over the world. He said in his biography, "Someday someone will collect all the native people's prophecies, myths, and legends and would publish them in one place so they could be compared with those of all native peoples worldwide, and then we really will have something." And friends, you'll be absolutely shocked to find out that we discovered exactly what that something was that Mad Bear wanted everyone to know. As it turns out, that certain special something that Mad Bear was searching for in the prophecies has everything to do with your physical safety and how to protect it. Now folks, there's absolutely nothing available on the planet like this collection. You'll receive instant access to the Prophecy Keeper's Wisdom Treasury Vault. This is a huge 4.88 gigabyte library, 3,287 files in 222 folders. You'll also receive direct access to links that will allow you to download all past Prophecy Keeper's interviews. Now folks, I won't kid you, Prophecy Keeper's does need money to continue to operate. So please head on over to prophecykeepers.info and take a look.
To all mankind again, Prophecy Keeper, Prophecy Keeper, oh yeah.
We're opening up to that, in my opinion, the elders have been trying to guide us wayward children for many, many generations now into the right memory, hoping that we would wake up before we destroyed everything. Maybe there was some covenant that they decided to let the wayward children develop on their own without any repercussions. You know, the Hopis raised their children without any law. You're aware of that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, basically, they can run wild and run free because this may be the last generation. So they don't grow up in the other world. And the other thing is, you know, like you were talking earlier about things on the internet and people saying nasty things about you and anybody who's out there doing anything. And the fact of the matter is, most people don't have a clue. They don't have any idea of how things work. They don't realize that there are societies here that exist off rules, etiquette, and conduct that go back thousands of years. And that a lot of these things that they're accusing people of, these people would not be alive if they did these things.
Mm-hmm.
But they don't know because they think everything's Silicon Valley. Everything's, air-conditioned cars and TV. And what do you mean by turning on my sink, the water doesn't come out? Okay, you mean I got a hole of water? I got a sponge bath? It's like, well, how do you think they got across? I mean, you think like, you know, when Jesus traveled the world that he stopped at Holiday Inns? It happened. And we lost a lot in that transition from realizing how much work it took everybody, every day, every minute to make life move smoothly, to allow life to have grace, to allow learning. We no longer put our emphasis on education, and maybe sometimes justifiably so, because the education that we got for so long, especially the last 300 years, was false. It was predicated and built upon lies. And so now, the purification that the Hopis speak of, or the initiation, as the Mayans refer to it, is that we're going through trial by fire. now that is a non-truth dissolves in front of our eyes, whether it's a relationship, whether it's our job position, whether it's our false status in the community, whether it's our false status as a pious religious preacher, preaching false documents and bending people's will to the way it is. I mean, if all of these things are being tested, all of these things were going through a trial by fire. And in the end of it, I see great hope for everybody, but we're going to have to stand tall, and we're going to have to stand firmly on the ground. You know, the Gonna-Wida talked about in the end times after the, he did his prophecy, the three dragons, which everybody got confused and thought that the white dragon, the red dragon, and the black dragon were, had to do with race. And then, well, okay, how do we explain the black dragon? Well, the black dragon's got to be the UN guys, because they're all wearing black fatigues and stuff, but the UN wears blue, right?
I to tell you the truth, I think the black, well, let's bring folks up to date on this. The prophecy was that the white dragon would be here, or white serpent, and that the red dragon would come down across the pole and enter into a battle with the white dragon. Now, prior to this, the Indians would have been released, and would,
the white dragon would come, and it would be crippled, and it would ask the Indian people to help it stand up on its feet. And
right.
The Indian people would help it, but then the white dragon would become increasingly more and more greedy. And it would take more and more and more without recourse.
Right.
And then it would become almost the enemy of the native people.
Right.
And then the red dragon would come.
But before the red dragon comes, the Indian people are released from their captivity, and they would go to the hilly country and burn tobacco and get to know each other then.
Right.
And then the attack would come. And they would have this great struggle, and then a black dragon or serpent would come out of the sea.
From the south.
From the south. Would enter into...
A white woman with these magical feathers, and it would ask her what was going on, and she would tell it the stories of all the devastation and the corruption, and it would become angry, and it would go and declare war on the Red Dragon, right?
But once the black dragon came into the mix, it would stop.
Isn't it in Prophecy Keepers? You have the story of the Gonna-Wida.
Yeah, yeah. The version that was taught by Mad Bear didn't have the woman in it. But it said once the black serpent entered into the battle, it would turn the battle in the favor of the... It would stop the battle. The red dragon would go back where it came from. The black dragon would go back into the sea and swim away and never be heard of again.
Right, but it also thought that the native people would become as dust upon the land, that many of them would not even remember their way, and that in this coming together of people in commonality in the hilly country, people would start to remember and return to the ancient knowledge, the old ways. Remember that part?
Mm-hmm.
And that the dragon, the black dragon, would look, and it would totally destroy the red dragon. And it would bring devastation everywhere, and then it would turn toward the hilly country, and it would see these people, these new people, who had returned to the original ways. They would be standing with their hands across their chest, which was not a stance in our ancient ways of defiance. It was a stance of confidence.
And Hunbach's men phrase that way.
Yeah.
Not with folded arms, but our hands across chest.
Yeah, and that he would see these people standing tall and firmly upon the ground and rooted and grounded in their ways, and he would realize there was no contest here. He would turn. He would not attack them. That's how I remember the end of the story.
I'm beginning to wonder if, since the we had, most people identified the Red Dragon with the communist countries, and because they have the color red, and the White Dragon with the European governments on this side. I'm beginning to wonder if the black, you know, I begin to wonder, you know, because the terrorism and Muslim, some of their holy men wear black, but their color is really green. Beginning to wonder if the Black Dragon aren't off planet, because they would be the only ones that would have the power to.
Because the black represent the void, space.
Okay. Yeah. Right. They would be the only ones that would have the power to intervene to stop the battle, and the only ones that would have the wisdom to see that those few that were in the hilly country. Burning tobacco probably shouldn't be messed with, because there wouldn't be any contest. Because if you're living all things common, even the Bible says you'll be divinely protected and you'll be fed like stall-fed calves. So, yeah, the possibilities are really kind of interesting here about who the Black Dragon is. You got me thinking.
Well, you know, we can go down, and there's a lot of, the Aztec have a lot of red and blue dragons. The Mayans have white, red and black, and I've seen yellow and green. So dragons were very prevalent here in the old understanding. We find dragons even up here in North America, not to the extent that they was incorporated into the architecture like it was in Mesoamerica with the Inca and the Mayan, predominantly the Mayan and the Aztec. But the Azteca were very strange people.
My dragons, we might want to clarify that these were flying serpents.
Yeah, they were not reptilians from the world of David Icke. They were flying dragons with wings. And Quetzalcoatl himself is called a blue dragon. I think that, you know, all of that artwork was encoded language. A lot of times when we look at, like, the Gateway of the Sun, in Peru, and we look at the depiction over the gateway of Viracocha, and Viracocha is, you notice that there's always two beings. There's one being within the other being. There's one being emerging out of the other being.
Mm-hmm.
And my understanding of that from both Inca and Maya is that that had to do with a dual genetic. Okay? That there was a natural man, and then there was a created man. But that the natural man would always come through, and eventually, and it's not something that can be, you know, done in 5 minutes. You have to go through all these codes. A thousand images, and 20 years of reading them and understanding them. But the natural man would always come through. In the end, as we go through this time of emergence, which is what 2012 is all about, it's not about the end of the world, it's about emergence. It's one of the most hopeful prophecies that ever was, and nothing to do with that's what all the academians put on it, because they don't understand the way that the knowledge works. When you're looking at a codex, very simply, you cannot look at one page of it, or you cannot look at one part of it. You have to look at the whole thing. You cannot just read one section. And a lot of people turn around and they understood one calendar, for instance, the Mayan, and then they made a whole religion about the one calendar. And my kumbach would say, but what about the other 16? You see, you have to understand how it all works together, because their consciousness, their perception was totally holistic. It was spherical. How's that? It wasn't just a circle, it was spherical. They knew how things would come and how things would go and how things would affect, and how things would come from above and things would come from below. That's why whenever you do real ceremony, we say that for a reason, because there's a lot of people out there who like to do things with parlor tricks. You know, I've seen the little crystals inside the rattles inside the sweat lodge, you know. That's a big difference than when the guy moves his hand and you see this trail of blue light. You go, wow! You know? And then you get up and the guy next to you in the lodge goes, who was the big guy sitting next to me? And you go, there was nobody sitting next to you. So the dragon is part of it. And there are dragons all over Southwest. There's dragons all over South America. I mean, there are giant dragons down in Peru and Bolivia.
Well, our people say that shortly before the whites got here, that was the last time we saw one.
That we saw a dragon?
Mm-hmm, the Cherokees.
Yeah, but they're in the earth.
Yeah, they are.
The earth. If you go up to Canada and you talk to Sioux Schwab, and they know the difference between the rumblings of an earthquake and the rumblings of the dragons that are awakening. Because they believe that in this end time, that the dragons will awaken and return. It's like they have cycles, kind of.
Yeah.
And there are periods when they go and periods when they come. And I've always been absolutely amazed how in this particular time zone that we're in, the last 100 years or so, there's a lot of it that looks like it's dying and withering, you know, but it's like as we're going from one age to another, that's part of emergence. But we're seeing all of these things springing up seemingly sometimes almost out of nowhere. We're seeing this ancient knowledge coming up in full flourishing. It's totally there, out of nowhere. And nobody even knew about it 20 years ago. I think the dragons are still here.
Well, from what Rolling Thunder said, he said that there was a certain cave that you could go to in North Carolina, and you could go in and ask the serpent. You could be lucky. If you wanted to be a holy man, you could do that. And, you know, whatever it was that you wanted, your wish could be granted. And I got to thinking later on that, well, maybe that serpent he was asking, maybe that was a flying serpent that was in the cave.
Well, I remember RT having a lot of faults, specifically a short temper. But I don't ever remember him lying. And sometimes his teachings were very harsh. And like he said, you're so stupid, I don't know how you're going to survive.
Yeah.
You're so dumb.
Look inside the rainbow. Look inside the heart. Deep in the mountain stillness, echoes of another time, let the wind blow.
Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments. Folks, the scriptures say, my people perish for lack of knowledge. We live in a world that's becoming more and more dangerous as time goes by. Millions of people are aware of this fact now and are actively preparing. Back in 2004, the folks here at Prophecy Keepers Foundation foresaw this situation and began preparing information for you. Friends, I seriously suggest that you head over to prophecykeepers.info and take a look at the Prophecy Keepers Trilogy and Preparedness Library. The Prophecy Keepers Trilogy is a 1,000-page intelligence briefing. The trilogy is a sum total of many years of collecting, collating, analyzing, and comparing prophecies from all